On September 11th, 2001, 19 terrorists hijacked 4 planes and proceeded to carry out the most devastating terrorist attack in American history. 2 of these planes were flown into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York City. A 3rd plane hit the Pentagon outside Washington, D.C. A 4th plane crashed into a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Almost 3,000 people died during the attacks. And while things have improved for us since then, we've never quite been the same. I'm Chef Marcus Samuelson, one half of This Moment. And this week, it's a very personal story for all of us, but for me. And I want to bring in a very dear friend of mine, Chef Michael LaMonaco. He was the head chef at Windows of the World, the restaurant, the World Trade Center. And today, in honor of the 20th anniversary, we thought it would be important for Michael to share his story, his personal story of what happened that day. Chef Michael LaMonaco.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
This year, this week, is the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And a little background on it for me, I was just a young chef coming up in New York City, and Chef Michael was kind enough to allow me and my team to cook at the Towers the weekend before. So late August, early September 2001, and Chef had been just as gracious as always and allowed me and the crew to come in there and cook. So with that, I'm saying welcome to This Moment, Chef. How are you?
I'm doing well. I appreciate actually that you reminded me of that event, that dinner we did together. It was really fabulous. It was. It was a great evening, a great memory that I'm glad you reminded me of. I didn't remember it was the weekend before.
Yeah.
And you know, so much has transpired that actually to have that memory back, I appreciate that. Thank you, Marcus.
And you worked at Le Cirque, and you worked in some amazing homes, 21 Club. You worked at some amazing places in New York City, really like iconic sort of like. But I think it all prepared you to be the chef at Windows of the World. Can you just throw a little bit of numbers, right? Because this is 20 years ago. I think it was the busiest restaurant in New York City, if not the country. Tell us a little bit about the restaurant at Windows of the World.
Well, Windows on the World opened in 1976. Joe Baum, who really was and remains a hero to me as a restaurateur and a creative force in our industry. By time 2001 came around, and just... So I went to work at Windows in 1997. Mm-hmm. They had been closed from the bombing of 1993. They were closed for 3 years. The first attack on the World Trade Center was 1993. And then in 1996, they reopened. And In 1997, Joe Baum and David Emile, who were the co-owners of the rest of the complex, really, asked if I would come and join them and kind of reconceive what they had conceived a year earlier. So we were on two floors, the 106th and 107th floor, and we had 450 people who worked there.
Wow.
We were open 7 days a week. Really, breakfast was served Monday through Friday because we had a private club, the World Trade Center Club. So we served that club breakfast and lunch every day. And we served dinner 7 nights a week. We had Windows on the World, the restaurant. We had the greatest bar on earth, which is what it was called, which seated 350 people, and it was a live music venue, and we had sushi, and we had grilled foods and bar foods, and then we had a huge catering complex that took up a number of rooms on both floors, and we also had the small little boutique Cellar in the Sky, which was very famous, and in fact, that was something that attracted me as a young actor to Windows on the World as a sort of an iconic restaurant. And we converted that into a Wild Blue, which was an American chop house and not dissimilar to things that I've done since, including mm-hmm. Porterhouse Bar and Grill. So with 450 people, Marcus, they came from all over the world.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you met people on your visit there. I'm sure you met people who worked with us from the continent, from the African continent. We had people from from every continent. We had 65 languages spoken. They were the magic element in making Windows on the World even more special than anything else about it. Mm-hmm. It's always about the people, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's always about the people and relationships.
I wanted to ask that question so people understand that you run a city within a city, basically. That building is a city, it's a village within the city, because when you have that many people, just think about the logistics. You have to get the food, then you have to get the food up to 106th and 107th floor, and then all the different touches in logistics. And that wouldn't work without being a great people person and the love, respect for different nationalities. And that's why I think about every time you came to Windows, it was huge, but you always made it feel small, right? Like I never felt, not until you stop work and you look at that incredible view where you can basically see to, you know, Ohio and Pennsylvania and Connecticut, depending on where you look at it from, right? But it never felt as big, because you come, whether you take the subway or however you get there, and then the towers are just humongous, right? But once you're in there, you guys made it feel like it was the neighborhood restaurant. And obviously it wasn't, but you made it feel like that.
I think that is such a kind thing to say, because as a chef, you know this better than anybody, because your personal touch is what inspires the people around you to have that warmth and to offer that kindness to total strangers, make them feel like old friends and greet them warmly. It's the most important part of the sort of the transactional experience of going to a restaurant is how they take you into the restaurant.
Yeah.
And so when you went to Windows on the World, the first thing you did was you had to go take the elevator, and there was a greeter, one or two people who greeted you. And their greeting was probably the most important thing that was happening for us that evening as a restaurant. How they greeted you, how they welcomed you into the elevator, sending you up to the next stop, which was the 107th floor, for instance, where the restaurant was. And then you were greeted again. It always mattered to us. I think that it was an unsaid part of the experience that the the conviviality that we could share with each other as coworkers.
Yeah.
And there were 450 of us. That conviviality was conveyed to the guest. And honestly, that's one of the things that in my time, my 4 years there, and in all of these years that have passed, that I miss the most.
Yeah.
I miss my friends, of course, those we lost, but I also miss that we were once this, I hate the word restaurant family, but we were certainly a cohesive operation where everyone had a connection to each other, and people stopped and said hello to each other in the hallways. And, you know, we went 24 hours a day. We had 24 people on our overnight cleaning crew.
Yeah. Think about
so that. It went 24 hours a day. The first cooks were in at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
The last cooks went home at 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning after late seatings in the restaurant. And eventually the clouds come and rain forms and the guests lose the view, and what they're left with are the people.
Yeah. Michael, can I ask you, because I know you've been asked this a lot, but I want our listeners to really, that day, 9/11, why weren't you, it was a Tuesday, so why weren't you in the building that day? Tell me that, because that's just the serendipity of life.
Yeah. I mean, who knows luck better than us, right? Luck, you know, a lucky moment. We look back on it, you know, people have asked, how do you see that? I see it as just pure luck, my good fortune. You know, on that, my schedule in those days, and it's not that different now, but I, because we had club members, and the club members came from both, basically all over the world. People joined that club to be able, but there were business, it was business people from lower Manhattan. It was all kinds of people, but they were using the club as a place to have breakfast or lunch. So I made it a point to be there when we were serving. We were serving breakfast, we were serving lunch. So I would arrive at 8 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning and work typical chef hours, work straight through till 10, 10:30. 11 o'clock at night. I needed to get my reading glasses repaired. I had an appointment for that day at 12 noon to get my glasses repaired. But it was a primary election day in New York City that day. And there was no traffic. It was a very quiet morning all around. And when I arrived and I walked into the concourse level, which was a shopping center that sat at the base of the two buildings, the concourse level, the two buildings rose from the concourse level. The elevators were, you know, within walking distance from where I was. I walked into the concourse and I walked past the very eyeglass shop that I was going to go to at 12 noon. And I looked at my watch, Marcus, and I said, it's 8 o'clock. Why don't I get my glasses fixed now, or at least turn them in so they could fix the lens. And then I don't have to leave work. I can stay and do what I have to do. So rather than go to the elevator to go up to the kitchen, I went into the lens crafter shop. And they said, sure, we can take you. We can do it right now. Sure. And that's where I was when the first building, when my building, the North Tower, was struck by the first plane.
So now it's about 8 o'clock. The first tower, the tower is getting 8:15 around that time?
No. So it was 8:43.
Yeah.
So you have to imagine they welcomed me at the eyeglass shop. Then they examined me. They did an exam. Then we looked at other eye frames. And then the doctor talked to me. And by the time they finished all this, I was still sitting in the optometrist chair with the optometrist talking to him about my prescription when I felt the building shake.
Wow.
I felt the vibration of the first plane. So Marcus, imagine behind me, sitting where I was in the concourse level, the number one train passes below ground right there. Yeah. And, you know, I'm a native New Yorker, so I knew there's a subway line behind me.
Yeah.
Literally feet away in terms of the geography of where I was sitting. And I thought, that can't possibly be the subway train. What could that be? And as I was sitting there kind of trying to figure out what that was, the lights went out. Mm-hmm. And there was an emergency light that went on where I was sitting. The lights went out. And then really within 60 seconds, 90 seconds, they started to evacuate the concourse level. And someone came running into the examining room and said, they're evacuating the building. We have to get out of here.
Wow.
So I picked myself up. I left my glasses behind. They were sitting on the table. And I thought, once I got outside, I thought, well, I can go back later and get them.
Sure.
I'll go back later. And when I got out into the concourse level, the shopping level, see, that was below grade, below ground level. There were security guards, there were people with flashlights, and they were directing people to the exits. So yeah. They directed me out to Liberty Street. So for your listeners, Liberty Street is south. It's on the south side of the complex. And that's where tower number 2 is on Liberty Street. Or was, I should say. Mm-hmm. So I had no idea what had happened. When I got out onto the street, the sky was littered with paper. Paper. Like confetti. There was so much paper showering onto the street.
Wow.
And as I looked out onto the street, not having any sense of what had happened, there was a fire engine on the street. And that was what I considered our fire engine, because there was a firehouse right there, number 10.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And I knew those guys because they used to come up and do inspections at the restaurant.
Sure.
You know, I knew that fire department unit, and they were out on the street and they were looking up. And I looked on the street and Marcus, I saw debris that was as big as a car. And I didn't quite how the mind works. I couldn't quite understand what it was, but it was part of the fuselage of that first plane. And I didn't, you know, the phrase is does not compute. It just did not make sense. And everyone on the street was in the same sense of confusion, in the sense of what had just happened.
And what was, I mean, did people then already said that we've been attacked, or did, because it's total chaos in the street. Like, what was the mood? What was that? What was happening in the street around you?
So this is before even the police have arrived. This is before any fire units have arrived, except for number 10 that was there. And I walked to the corner, and that's Church Street. And there's a green market. We had a green market there. The same green market folks from Union Square Green Market came on Tuesday mornings to the World Trade Center. And I used to buy produce from them.
Yeah.
Tuesdays and Fridays, they would get to us. And I used to buy my local produce from those very people. And they were packing up. Instead of unpacking, they were packing up.
They were going, and getting out of here.
Yeah. And as I looked up at tower number 1, the North Tower, that's where Windows on the World was, in the North Tower. And as I looked up on the facade, I saw some damage, but not a lot of damage, but smoke billowing. I had no idea what had happened. No one at that point knew what had happened. So I went to find a phone because my cell phone wasn't working. I started to do a mental calculation. Who's working this morning? Who's on the shift today? Mm-hmm. Who opened? Who's in the kitchen? Who's in the dining room? What chefs are working? What cooks are working this morning? Usually that would be, I knew we had a banquet. We had a banquet breakfast that morning. We had 100 people in the banquet in one of the banquet rooms for a breakfast that morning. So I knew the banquet team was there, the morning team. And I went to go find a phone. I ran to find a phone. And I did get to Wall Street, a few streets away. And I found a payphone and I called my wife, Diane. Diane worked about a mile away, north of this. She could almost see this from her office.
Wow.
I called my boss. I called the owner of the restaurant. I said, you better turn your TV on. Something has happened. I don't know what's happened, but I'm outside. That's what I told Diane as well. I'm outside. I don't know what's happened, but I'm going back. I'm going to go back to the building now and see if I can help at the ground level in any way. See if I can help. Because what came to mind was 1993. And you must have seen photographs of people streaming out of the building with smoke, with their faces covered with soot.
Wow. And around that time, that's basically when the second tower gets hit. When you gather all of that, right? Then it's, so just what happens after that, Michael?
You are exactly right. Because as I was walking back, people are talking on the street. People are trying, you know, everyone's in sort of chaos, as you said. And Marcus, they're talking to each other. And someone said, a plane hit the building. A plane hit the building.
Yeah.
How is that possible? I can't even imagine that. I was walking back down Liberty Street. I was at, and tower number two was directly in front of me. I was about a block away when I heard the roar of the second plane. And again, I couldn't imagine what that sound was, but the roar of jet engines was overwhelming. It was so loud, and I heard the roar. And as I heard it, I looked up at the same moment that the second plane hit tower number two, and I saw the explosion, the huge explosion of the fireball of tower number two being struck. Now I knew. We're under attack. This is an attack. And the shock was overwhelming that I became emotional on the street. Yeah. I was there emotional. Now for the lives that I just witnessed being lost with the second plane's impact. Now I understood what had happened to tower number one. It was a plane. It wasn't a small plane. It wasn't an accident. This is an attack. Someone grabbed my arm, a total stranger grabbed me, and they said, come on. And they tried to pull me into a building that I was standing next to. And they said to come inside for safety. And I said, no, thank you. I didn't want to go into another building.
Yeah,
I wanted to stay in the street. But rather than go towards the towers, I walked north towards City Hall.
Yeah.
Why? I wanted to get to the north side of my building, tower number one. I wanted to get to the north side. I wanted to see what had happened. I wanted to understand what had happened.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Can I ask you, Michael, like, it's only 20 years ago, but the conversation around mental health was not the same as it is today. How did you and your wife stay, just make sure that you, because for a chef to lose his or her team or part of the team, we've never had an event like this ever in New York City. And every community is different, but for a restaurant leader, for a chef, losing 20, 30 people, some whatever the number is, it's so unimaginable. It's so it's so unfair and insane. How did you deal with all of that? Because it's I know it's a big question, but like, how did you just move on eventually?
Well, you know, you're very right that I don't know if there's a simple answer, but first of all, as a human, I was so devastated by the loss of 72 people that I knew. It had a major impact on me. It had a I was so lucky that I was not up there. I was moments away from heading to the elevator. I was finished with my appointment. I would have been in that elevator 5 minutes from that moment. And it was my good luck. But the incredible loss is still processing. You know, the idea of losing people we know, we never forget them. We try to remember them. And we try to remember them with the good memories and not the painful memories. I mean, it's better to remember who they were and what they were rather than the tragedy of their loss. You know, remembering the goodness of people, remembering the good things is actually very helpful for helping us transition through grief.
Yeah.
And you know, those seven stages of grief are very, very much something that we need to work through. So as an individual, I had a lot of support from my family. That is really the truth. I have older brothers with families. I have nieces. I have nephew. I had a family who was really ready to help and support me. My brothers were here. One lived in Arizona at the time, and he was flying in almost every other weekend to spend time with us. Yeah. My brother, you know, as a family, we were, but also we have mental health doctors in my family. My brother is a psychiatrist.
Okay.
My niece is a psychiatrist. We spoke openly of the need to be able to work through these things. And I had a mental health practitioner. I had a doctor that I was able to see and someone that I was able to talk to on a real level to be able to really speak frankly and openly. And, you know, this idea of being able to talk about it, talking yeah. is what we need to do. We need to communicate our pain. We need to allow others to help us in order to help ourselves. We need to allow people in. So I was able to do that. But I have to tell you, the most important thing that I did, I think, to help myself, because all I could do was, if I don't help myself, I can't help others.
Yep.
Within days of 9/11, there were a group of us, a few other chefs. We sat down together and we created the idea that we would start a fundraiser. Restaurants, chefs, we were always asked to yeah. help others. We put together a foundation, Windows of Hope Family Relief Fund. And that fund was embraced by the restaurant world in New York, yeah. as you know. Sure. You were there.
Yeah.
You were part of it.
Yeah.
So you and our colleagues around the city and then other restaurant colleagues from around the country and around the world, Japan, Spain, Latin America, Morocco, Egypt, Japan, Switzerland, Italy, Spain, England, from all over the world, restaurants worked to try to raise funds for our,
yeah.
for our family members, for those family members who had lost someone that day, for the food service workers who were lost. So trying to help them was also a way of trying to help ourselves, myself, work our way through this, because yeah. surely their loss was greater than mine.
But this is fascinating, right? So I always say in my life, being adopted, the amount of luck that you are going back to that village and you ask yourself, out of all the kids here, how did me and my sister get adopted? I mean, there's, you talk about, you know, tons of kids. We had tuberculosis, we got into a hospital. I think once again, they picked us out of all the kids, right? So when you talk about luck, where you, the fact that you went into the eye doctor's office that morning, right? And didn't even have the 8 o'clock time, but like you, as chefs, we always think about how can I buy more time? From the minute you leave the house,
yes.
you're going,
yes.
right? And here's a chance for me to buy 45 minutes of whatever it was, right?
Yes.
You know, looking at the clock and so on, right? And I know also you were, I remember you told me this before that your wife kind of been on you. You gotta go, man. I'm booking a time for you because that day, it could have been a year ago or something like that. You were supposed to be there in the earlier too, right? So there's so many
this
different things leading up to that day, right? So I think we share that in terms of luck and also coming back with gratitude. Right, like I've always thought about being adopted. I'm going to make sure that this moment that my parents gave me, that I'm going to show them gratitude. So I'm going to strive to show gratitude once I meet other people. Right? Doesn't always work, but it's very important to me to share that. Right? The second part is during this pandemic, I thought a lot about 9/11. I thought about it in almost in a talking to myself. Well, I remember trying to not have the same experience at all as yours, but how do you operate a restaurant after 9/11, right? Who cares about going to, it's not even important anymore, right? So when the pandemic happened, I had to go back in my head, well, if I could manage that, I know I have some strength in me that I know we can manage ourselves through this moment. So the navigation and you talk about community, you guys started a foundation that became very meaningful. Even in this moment, there was a foundation in terms of independent restaurant coalition that was started out of
right.
the pandemic. Right? So who are we as chefs? We go back to our communities, right? And we have each other's. And it's still something as a New Yorker, you know, that, you know, once you enter the Wall Street area, which is really where the towers are, you cannot not think about it. Like, it doesn't end. Did it take you a long time to go back down there? Did you stay away? Like, what was the emotions with this part of town, which is obviously such an important part town of New York City for you and your family?
Well, that's a very insightful and sensitive question, really. You know, we started the foundation to help the families of the food service workers who were lost. Okay. So there were 72 at Windows. We had 6 construction workers. We had 1 security guard, 79 people in Windows. There were other food service facilities in the building, a law firm that had people who made breakfast or lunch for them, a hot dog vendor on the street. There were 102 food service workers who were lost. They have 250 family members. Mm-hmm. So what we could do for them was more important than however I was feeling. So that did help me to process my own pain, grief. And the only thing I know how to do is cook. And what they were doing was they were cooking and serving and cleaning and working in the service of others. So it was at that moment, honest, where I felt the need to dedicate the work I do to the memory of my lost friends. This is what they were doing on that morning. So in a silent prayer every day, it's part of my daily rising. I get up to go to work in memory of my friends. I've never forgotten that. It's something I've kept. So the gratitude never goes. It's important that we try to take care of others, that we try to help others. And I think that we both understand. I mean, I came from a very humble background. I grew up in Brooklyn. My father was a barber, you know, an immigrant. You know, I'm a first generation. I'm a child of immigrants. This is how the dream is made. How can I help others achieve their dream? Yeah. You know, what can I do? So there was a scholarship segment to the foundation that has helped people go to school all these years.
Yeah.
And that is probably the thing that has given me more satisfaction. At the very beginning, in getting to your question, it's difficult for me to look at the new tower, the World Trade Center.
Sure.
It's not easy. I went down, all of us were doing some volunteer work. I went down to a kitchen that was on Canal Street, a restaurant. They were serving meals to the first responders. And I went down there a number of times to cook and to bring ingredients that other people could cook, and we were feeding first responders in the restaurant. And so that was how I got closer.
Yeah.
And I was heartbroken, emotionally ravaged by this in the early days. And you could go, you know, you could go as close as you could get to the pile once they opened the streets again. See, because it was closed to anyone, but you know, they closed off, cordoned off an area much larger than the site. So I wasn't able to get there. But there came a point several months later where they began to open streets. And for about a year, I went once a week to the chain link fence.
Yeah.
Where they were working on the other side, clearing the pile. And I went, I'm not that spiritual, but I have to believe that there's something bigger than me. And I went and prayed once a week for those who were lost, all those who were lost. But then I was able to name my friends by name. And so this became sort of part of my healing process.
Yeah. Chef, it's an incredible story, and you humanize it. And as New Yorkers, we all have New Yorkers of a certain generation, because I was actually speaking to a friend of mine and her son that is born 2004. For him, it's just an event, right? And yes, it was almost a relief. And I was like, wow, you're right. If you're like starting college today, it was just not, you know, it wasn't lived the same way, right? And that's also a way to look at it from like, we're now 20 years away from this. And I just have to say, Michael, thank you so much for all you've done for the city. As a chef, as a person, you're always one of the kindest guys in the room. You constantly make time for people. And we also all, because this doesn't happen, right? You also rise again and have another incredible success, and a very important part of New York City as well, right? With Porterhouse, about 8-9 years later, you start again and you open at, you know, we think about the Time Warner Center and eventually, obviously, Hudson Yards. But I know that all the people that come to the restaurant, most of the people, because some could be tourists too, they know you. And they are so excited for your success, right? Like, you can't be in Time Warner building. And I was like, this is Michael's house. This is Michael's house. Do you know what I mean? And we're all, because there's other chefs in that building that we all know. But that, with the CNN being there and everything, that was their cafeteria. And we're excited for you. And thank you. I do think that the city will always embrace you, Michael. And you're part of, you're just part of our everyday in a different way. And it's just horrible that it was an event like that. But I wish you the best. And I thank you so much for sharing. And I will see you soon, Chef. And thank you for sharing. I know 9/11 is going to be a very, very difficult day for me. It happens to be on the same day as Ethiopian New Year. So there's always something positive by the end of end of that. But I also take a lot of strength from that. You have figured out the way to process this and turned it into part of who you are, but it's not something that you really make it, I shouldn't say positive, but you put it into dignity, I would say.
Well, thank you, Marcus. I appreciate that so much. I appreciate you having me. You know, the thing is that I'm a great admirer of yours, not just for your cooking, but for your humanity, your generosity, your leadership, and the role that you've taken, that you've it's not easy to carry, but the things that you've been able to teach others and give others, you know, people follow you and learn from you, and you teach the next generation of leaders how to lead. And it's an honor for me to know you and be here with you today. And sharing love is something you do so well that I'm in awe of you. I appreciate you. Thank you.
I will end on this. In every negative, hard situation, I always try to figure out what could be. Is there a flower of positivity? And my dear friend, Raymond Mohan, that worked at the Tower, opened another restaurant a couple of years later with staff that used to work at the Tower. And he met his wife at that restaurant. And they now have a very successful restaurant in Harlem called Lolo Seafood Shack, and their family. So I was like, that is the one light that I take.
Yes.
I know it's in there somewhere. I have to find it. And that's what I take out of that. So anyway, I love you, Chef, and thank you for sharing. And You have a wonderful day, okay?
Thank you. I love you, Marcus. Thank you. Thank you, Chef.
So that was Chef Mike LaMonaco. I just want to say thank you so much, Chef, for sharing your story. I think your story is something that can help people to heal, help us to remember and honor the lives. And this is something that I've come back to so many times that day. I just want to share it with our dear listeners. Peace.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.